develop into something closer to herself.
Mother? Offspring?
The unexpected words blunted Boxy's rage, and it didn't particularly enjoy the worrying implications.
Indeed. Though Milord arrived within mine trunk from beyond, I have cared for thee as if thou sprouted from mine own seeds.
But why, though?
Raising thee is a source of much joy and fulfillment for mine lonely self.
The shapeshifter felt a tinge of relief at those words. It would appear it misunderstood Ambrosia's behavior. The dryad had been treating it the way she had, not out of some misguided sense of lust, but out of an equally questionable parental obligation. Boxy felt silly for assuming the nature of her apparent affections was sexual. Then again, it could hardly be blamed for concluding as such. Every monster girl the shapeshifter had encountered had been, objectively speaking, both nubile and perverted in their own way. This was especially true of the demonic trio, but hardly limited to them. Given Ambrosia's outrageously voluptuous appearance, it was only natural to expect she would crave some sort of sexual gratification. Boxy was glad that at least one of the females in its life was not a degenerate motivated by baser instincts. It also wouldn't complain that the powerful entity saw it as an adoptive child, something to be cared for and protected. However, none of that alleviated its suspicions. If anything, it only made them seem more plausible. So it decided to press the matter a bit further.
If you claim to have done nothing, then why was my head in your lap when I woke up?
I just felt like it.
You felt like it?
I was maintaining vigil over Milord's rest, just as thou requested. Then I noticed a strangely familiar sensation coming from within thee. I approached thee out of wonder and somehow ended up cradling thy fruit-shaped noggin in mine lap. It just seemed the most natural thing to do at the time.
Come to think of it, why have you been so touchy-feely with me ever since I came back? What's that about?
Boxy wasn't particularly bothered by the extra attention, but it didn't care for it either. Furthermore, it felt some of her actions went beyond what one would consider normal in the context of a mother-child relationship. Admittedly, Boxy was only vaguely aware of how a mother would act, and it was doubtful whether that limited knowledge applied to a millennia-old tree woman. However, the monster decided to use this opportunity to try and figure out exactly what was going on in that vegetable brain of hers.
I simply wish to spoil Milord while I am able to. That is all.
What is? What do you mean by while you are able to?
Milord will eventually leave me.
She spoke quietly.
Mayhap tomorrow, mayhap in a month, mayhap decades or even centuries from now. But thou will undoubtedly be separated from me by the passage of time. Thy recent absence had simply reminded me of this inevitability.
So, what? You got clingy because you missed me?
Indeed.
And how's that going to solve anything?
Ambrosia adopted a solemn smile that oozed with the melancholy and sadness of having to live through literal millennia of solitude.
I wish to form as many pleasant memories with thee as possible. Thou art unique, special, extraordinary even. Thy companionship, although brief, has filled me with a profound joy and happiness that I have not experienced before, nor will I experience since. It is a tasty feeling that I wish to preserve forever.
She waved her hand towards one of the walls on the edge of the dungeon core platform, and the countless divine letters and words etched in it began glowing a bright yellow light.
"'Tis also why I have endeavored to carve said memories onto mine heartwood, so that I would not allow myself to forget. I am certain that, when the time comes, thy passing will most likely leave a deep wound on mine soul.' Forgetting thee would probably help mine future self heal, but mine current self wishes to cherish every single moment I have spent in thy presence. That is the wish of this tree who hath lived for too long, the wish of one who is forever destined to be the one left behind.
Ambrosia put one foot slightly in front of the other and bent over with a twirl of her hands. It was a flawlessly elegant bow that even a refined lady of noble birth would have difficulty imitating.
"Therefore,"
she continued while staring at the floor with eyes closed,
"I beg for thy mercy and forgiveness regarding any transgression I may have committed against thee. I swear upon the goddess that I truly meant thee no harm nor disrespect, and humbly request that thou allow me to continue serving thee as I have until now."
"Fine, whatever," the shapeshifter gave in after a few moments of silence. "Do what you want, just make sure your antics don't get in my way."
"Thou art most gracious."
Ambrosia deepened her bow. Boxy only passively listened to the heartfelt speech. Halfway through her inane babbling, the monster realized that blaming her was a waste of time and energy. It had briefly forgotten just how bad this dryad was at lying and scheming in the first place. She was far too honest and naive to even consider sabotage or subterfuge. After calming down and thinking things through, Boxy realized that if it wanted to find the culprit responsible for this anomalous rank-up, it needed only to look in a mirror. Reggie, the resident expert on doppelganger physiology, stated that their kind were prone to mutation. That implied it wouldn't be that odd if a new or rare variant of the species popped up seemingly out of nowhere. Such things were usually brought about as a result of one's environment, and Boxy had spent a significant amount of time interacting with dryads. It talked to them, made deals with them, dwelled within their trees, and even gorged on their nectar. Considering its recent behavior, its evolution into a plant-monster hybrid had most likely been brought on as a result of its own actions. Besides, this wasn't necessarily a bad thing. The inborn ability to transform flesh into different kinds of vegetation through shapeshifting was undoubtedly going to be useful. Boxy just needed to discover its limits and learn what sort of new forms it could assume. It also needed to consider the new racial skill that came with its new subspecies. Phytokinesis, the ability to manipulate vegetation through the power of one's mind. Requirements, creeper variant. Type, sustained. Activation time, instant. Cost, variable. Range, 5 meters. Effects, grants control over targeted vegetation within range. Consumes MP based on the size and weight of targets under the effects of this skill. The strength, speed, and range of control exerted by this skill are amplified by mental fortitude and natural affinity. Increases the effectiveness of this skill by 10% per level of this skill. It would seem that the telekinetic potential of adult doppelgangers had manifested itself in a curious way. Boxy didn't know whether to be happy about this or not. On one hand, it would have preferred the ability to move everything with its mind instead of merely plants. At the same time, the narrow focus of the skill implied that the power it could exert was more potent than its more versatile counterparts. This common sense had been drilled into the monster's body throughout its life of violence and mayhem. However, Boxy couldn't know for sure whether that logic applied to phytokinesis. It simply had no frame of reference. So, for the moment, it stopped worrying about what could have been and graciously accepted this new ability that it bestowed upon itself, from itself, on behalf of itself. Gratuitous self-congratulations aside, the shapeshifter attempted putting its newly acquired skill to the test. At first, it considered using it on its immediate surroundings, but ultimately decided against it. A good spot to practice plant control didn't exist within its dungeon. There was, after all, only a single specimen of vegetation to be found in the monster's lair, and it already had an owner. Admittedly, said owner was idiotic, gullible, and somewhat delusional, but nevertheless far too powerful for any single mortal to contend with. Since flexing its mental muscles didn't seem feasible at the moment, Boxy checked out its physical ones. It began by transporting itself to its treasury using the Dungeon Core's Nexus access, and for once had no intention of playing around. Granted, that would still happen to some degree, but the main purpose of its visit was to test the limits of its physical strength. Before the rank up, it could lift roughly 270 kilograms of valuables, which was about a fifth more than its body weight. Any more than that, and its muscles and bones would begin screaming and creaking in pain as the massive load threatened to crush it flat. And now, even though it had gained hardly any mass, it could bear a load 50 kilograms heavier than its previous limit. It was a rough, unscientific experiment, but one that clearly demonstrated a marked increase in raw physical power. The next thing on Boxy's agenda was to test if its speed and stamina had increased, so it started running mad laps inside its treasury. Unfortunately, it didn't seem that either of those parameters had improved. Either that, or the change was too minute to notice, in which case it wouldn't make a difference. Still, the exercise had served as a good warm-up. In Boxy's personal experience, the best way to adapt to a new body was to thoroughly put it through its paces. With that in mind, the monster confirmed that its vitally important shapeshifting abilities weren't negatively impacted by its new subspecies. Flesh, bone, teeth, and metal were molded with the usual speed, consistency, and accuracy. Its newly acquired vegetative options were atrociously slow and clumsy by comparison, but that was only temporary. Boxy felt confident that, with enough study and practice, it could eventually add trees, shrubs, grasses, flowers, and vines to its already impressive repertoire. Ultimately, plant shifting was no different from any of the other transformations it had attempted for the first time. Boxy could already envision a number of practical applications once it mastered this new ability. One such possibility was brought on by its new subspecies, the full designation of which was Creeper, Hilt, according to its status. From what it could tell, creepers were doppelgangers that adopted traits from certain species of vegetation. In Boxy's case, it was related to the almighty Hilt tree, allowing it to easily convert its flesh into iron bark. This unique material's toughness was equal to first-grade steel at only a fraction of the weight. Plus, it was much easier to move around in compared to metal mimicry. Not to mention, it was completely free in terms of MP consumption. In short, iron bark was the superior defense option when compared to the monster's usual trick of turning its skin to steel. However, the material wasn't all that useful when it came to offense. Boxy seemed incapable of shaping its iron bark into a keen edge. Even though it created massive sword arms out of it, they might as well have been oversized butter knives. It would appear that, though the stuff excelled at absorbing and diffusing impacts, it wasn't rigid enough to serve as a blade. This immensely puzzled the creeper. Didn't the dryad quintuplets back at the fort use iron bark for their shunky ambush? Come to think of it, elvish craftsmen sometimes worked with so-called hardened iron bark. Perhaps the plant matter had to be processed in some way to make it viable for weaponry. Boxy shelved the matter for the moment to revisit at a later date. Currently, it would stick with the tried and tested metal mimicry approach whenever it needed to improvise some weapons. The last thing Boxy wanted to figure out about its new self was that odd craving for sunlight it experienced immediately after waking up. The sensation had already passed, but it couldn't help ponder what had brought it on. Admittedly, it didn't seem that big of a mystery. It had become part plant with the ability to sprout branches and leaves, which implied it could now use sunlight for sustenance. Curious as to what that would feel like, the shapeshifter ascended to the vast canopy at the very top of Ambrosia's tree. Upon arriving in the dense, foliage-ridden microcosm, Boxy was momentarily taken aback by the absurd amount of webbing everywhere. It would appear that its arachnid familiar had built quite the nest up there by utilizing her lavender-colored demon silk. Drea produced the material in question through the various things she ate, so it wouldn't disappear after a certain amount of time like her magically conjured webs. This allowed the stalker demon to construct a sprawling lair with clearly defined floors, ceilings, walls, pillars, and other building-like elements. She even took the time to shape wads of demon silk into furniture like beds, armchairs, and hammocks. It didn't seem like Drea actually used any of it, judging by the thin layer of debris and filth that clung to everything. Boxy, for its part, didn't care about any of that. It came up here to taste the sun, and this overindulgent web house was in the way. It ripped, burned, and cut its way through as it climbed higher and higher through the webbed-up foliage. Eventually, It made its way onto a relatively flat branch that was receiving plenty of sunlight through a gap in the brush. The nearby scorch marks revealed it as the same place the monster had used to conduct the ritual of unholy wealth. There weren't many spots within Ambrosia's canopy that had both stable footholds and a clear view of the sky, and this was the only one Boxy knew of. Now that it was here, it stood in the midday sun's golden rays and willed a leafy bush to sprout from its back and shoulders. It felt a bit silly at first, but then it experienced a warm, invigorating sensation that spread through its twigs as the creature experienced photosynthesis for the first time. The monster had no idea how it worked or even what the process was called. It didn't need to, either. As far as Boxy was aware, plants liked to eat sunlight, and now that it was doing it, it could understand why those immature dryads bickered over it so much. The sun was tasty. Hold on. It realized something.
Didn't I have something important to do?
Indeed, it had been so preoccupied testing its new limits that it had forgotten something quite vital.
Snack!
It called out telepathically.
Oh, Master, you're finally awake!
The succubus replied enthusiastically.
Am I to understand we shall be launching Operation Ruin Reggie's Life within the hour?
Zira never liked how that self-important prick dared to think himself her master's superior. His apparent betrayal regarding the all-important rank-up process was, in her completely unbiased opinion, absolutely unforgivable.
Not just yet, Boxy informed her. Just give me a status report for now.
As you wish, Master. I assumed Kira's guise once morning came as per your orders and have been filling in for you since then. I pretended to feel down and contemplative due to a terrible dream so as to avoid interacting too much with Roanna. She bought it at first, but she is starting to suspect something is up.
Indeed, just as Boxy feared, Snack couldn't stand in as Kira for extended periods of time while having regular contact with the elf. The mysterious ability called Woman's Intuition was not to be trifled with.
Where are you two right now?
Asked Boxy.
We're in Roanna's house, Master. The elf is currently sitting at her desk working out some sort of budget. I'm in the room with her making myself look busy with your artificer tools.
You're not trying to make a mechanized penis again, right?
Of course not, Master.
She calmly denied the accusation.
That one time was just me teasing Fizzy a bit. I wasn't being serious. After all, the only thing that could truly satisfy my hopelessly perverted soul is my one and only Master.
Boxy let out an exasperated sigh. It could practically see the succubus winking at it with a demure smile upon her face. It was starting to understand Fizzy's unfavorable stance towards meat bags, especially her contempt of their disgustingly inefficient mating rituals.
Any abnormalities or noteworthy events happened during my absence?
It changed the subject.
Nothing in particular, Master. Although there was something that caught my attention while I was rooting through the elf's desk last night. It was a partially filled out requisition order for Honeydew on behalf of her clinic.
Hmm. How curious.
The mention of that particularly shiny liquid instantly piqued Boxy's interest. Come to think of it, that substance was supposedly banned in the Empire, yet legal in the Republic. It wasn't on sale in any of the shops Kira had visited, so it had almost forgotten that little tidbit. It made a mental note to casually ask Roanna about it while it was still in the city. If anyone knew what was special about honeydew, it would be an alchemist who apparently worked with the stuff.
Good work,
it commended her.
I am unworthy of such praise, Master. Rather, I must insist that you punish me for my incompetence by making me choke on your—
Just shut up and keep the elf busy. Be ready to swap in an hour or so.
Yes, Master.
Seeing as there was no emergency, the monster decided it could afford to take things a bit slow. It climbed down from the top of the tree and briskly returned to the dungeon core platform at the heart of its lair. It looked around for Ambrosia, but it would appear the dryad had disappeared somewhere. This was a bit vexing. Though Boxy's latest rank up hadn't starved it as badly as the previous ones, it had left the monster feeling a wee bit peckish, as the elves liked to say. The monster figured this was a good opportunity to sample the fruits of the dryad's culinary training. Her absence was therefore displeasing, though hardly an issue, considering it could reach her anywhere at any time.
Ambrosia! Did you prepare my meal like I requested?
Forgive me, milord. In all the excitement, I almost forgot about it. It is indeed ready, although I will need to reheat it.
Does it necessarily have to be heated?
Indeed. Most of the dishes I have prepared display superior flavor while they are warm.
All right. Then do what you have to do and bring it to me ASAP.
I do not understand. Does milord wish to sample mine sap as well?
No. ASAP is short for as soon as possible. It has nothing to do with sap.
Understood. In that case, I shall bring thee thy meal with utmost haste.
The shapeshifter waited with as much patience as it could muster as the dryad readied everything. She bent her interior bark in the shape of a large dining table and a fancy high-back chair. Boxy took the hint and seated itself. Ambrosia had yet to bring out the actual dishes, so the monster took this opportunity to once more temper its expectations. Optimism only led to disappointment, so it tried not to get too excited. That said, this was a meal prepared from the first-rate ingredients Claws had secured, so Boxy ended up salivating in anticipation despite itself. Ambrosia reappeared after about 15 minutes. She walked over to Boxy's seat in a prim and proper manner, her hands crossed in front of her belly and a welcoming smile on her face. Numerous green vines grew rapidly out of the floor at her passage like a grand wave of greenery. Atop this cascade of vegetation were 8 extra-large covered plates which were smoothly and securely passed from one plant to the next while keeping pace with the dungeon master. It was a culinary procession that even Boxy found entertaining to watch, though it would have preferred if she skipped the theatrics altogether. By the time the dryad's performance was over, her dishes were carefully laid out on the table. With a graceful flick of her wrists and a snappy twist of her vines, she presented every one of her specially prepared recipes to an increasingly excited Boxy. The first course was the appetizer, which consisted of a large plate of bite-sized bits of raw thigh meat lovingly wrapped in crispy, slightly charred skin. Boxy was an immediate fan, despite their small size. Next was a blood soup with lightly boiled facial features such as noses, ears, and lips. The third dish was a thick steak carved out of neck muscle marinated in a spicy, blood-based sauce. The fourth course was a quartet of human hearts with ground liver stuffing and a hint of sweet and sour herb flavoring. Number 5 was an order of nectar-basted human ribs that were incredibly savory and practically oozing with juices. The sixth dish was a slow-roasted human torso stuffed with shavings of arm and leg flesh. For dessert, Ambrosia had prepared a snowy white eyeball and nectar pudding that was so delicious it nearly drove Boxy to tears. The fact it was served in a pearly white skull instead of a bowl or plate made it all the more enjoyable. The last plate was a serving of deep-fried bone chips. The pleasant, crunching sensation and the hint of human fat mixed in with the slightly salty flavor was a very satisfying finish to the lavish meal. As for drink, Boxy regularly availed itself of fresh nectar directly from the source throughout the meal.
How was it, milord?
Ambrosia asked once the feeding frenzy concluded. Boxy was currently sitting in the chair in its favored chest-bound form. In fact, it was an improvement on the original design since the tightly bound planks of wood hiding its true self were actual timber.
Perfect, came the utterly content reply. Absolutely perfect.
The dryad's somewhat nervous smile turned into a pleasant grin. She pressed her quivering lips together, struggling to quell the enormous joy welling up inside her. She began quickly cleaning up, eager to go somewhere private where she could squeal, jump, and giggle without disturbing the tranquility of her house guest. And tranquility was the most accurate way to describe Boxy's current mental state. It couldn't believe that wonderfully orchestrated symphony of flavor was created by a creature that usually ate nothing but dirt, water, and sunlight. Each dish had a unique flavor, texture, and consistency that made it nearly impossible to compare them. It was almost as if each one was in its own league of deliciousness. Boxy could spend the next 3 months struggling to pick out its absolute favorite, and even then the results would be inconclusive. If pressed for answers then and there, It would rule its favorite a four-way tie between the bone chips, the stuffed hearts, the juicy ribs, and the eye pudding. It wasn't just the flavor, either. The sheer amount of meat, bone, and blood that Ambrosia had prepared was enough to piece together five, maybe even six people. It was honestly a wonder it all came from a single human. Or rather, it was outright impossible for someone to cut out so many vital organs and large chunks of flesh without killing the source, even with the waters of life. Had the Dryad procured additional ingredients while it slept? Did she recruit Claw's help to get them? And for that matter, did she use the Stalker to refine her recipes since the demon's tastes were so close to the shapeshifter's? These were the sort of culinary mysteries that Boxy completely did not care about beyond a passing thought. The veritable orgy of flavor it had just experienced washed away all its stress and grievances as if they were never there. Confidence and motivation welled up from within, almost as if it had found a new purpose to live. Rather than wallow in decadence, that meal made it want to go out there, grab the world by the balls, and then bite its head off. The only thing that put a slight damper on its mood was it expected Reggie's problem to be irksome. The payoff would be worth the trouble, though. Once that was settled, it could focus on siphoning off as much power and treasure as chestily possible from the ongoing war.
Ah, war, the monster mumbled. Boxy liked war. Perhaps even loved it. It had tasted the sweetness of wanton carnage on a few occasions and was eager to revel in the sensation once again. It wasn't just this war, either. The thought of any large-scale armed conflict made Boxy's teeth itch. Out of all the pointless notions invented by civilization, war was undoubtedly the tastiest. It was the only enlightened concept that resonated with the violent, selfish monster on some deeper level. For war did not determine who was right, only who was left. Interlude. A Box's Life.
Honey, I'm home!
Minnick jumped up from Minnick's seat and bounced around excitedly at those words. Minnick was feeling fluffy because Big Sis had returned, and Minnick would get to spend time with her. Big Sis was sometimes a big bro instead, but Minnick didn't mind. Okay, Minnick minded it a little, since there were fewer soft things around when Big Bro was a big bro instead of a Big Sis.
Welcome back, sweetie!
Her softness called out from the other side of the big box. Minnick liked her softness because she had two of the softest softies that had ever softed. She often held Minnick by pressing it against her softies, which felt nice and fluffy. Sometimes, however, it would feel one or two hard nubs poking into its undercarriage, which was less than fluffy. But Minnick learned to cope since her softness got angry at Minnick whenever it tried to press down on them. Big Sis didn't seem to mind that behavior, but her softies weren't nearly as fluffy as her softness. It was a bit of a shame, but Minnick didn't mind the size difference. Okay, Minnick minded it a little. But Minnick kept quiet about it because complaining would be rude to Big Sis. And Minnick liked Big Sis a lot.
Everything go well with Ariabelle?
Who?
You know, the girl that tore you away from me.
Oh, right. Bayhorn's niece had her name like that, didn't she?
You seriously forgot? Just how much of a scatterbrain are you, honestly?
Sorry, Roey. I guess I can't think of her as anything other than Bayhorn's niece. I know, it's rude, but...
Minnick didn't understand any of the words being thrown about, but Minnick could read the mood from the tone of their conversation. Minnick understood this was a serious matter, so Minnick tried to keep quiet. Otherwise, her softness might yell at Minnick and bar it from her fluffy globes yet again. That would be very bad if it were to happen.
Well, I guess we only just met this morning, but you need to work on that. I can't have you embarrassing me in front of my parents because you forgot their names.
I'll keep that in mind.
Good. Now then, I still have to finish preparing dinner.
Need any help?
No, I'm almost ready anyway. I had plenty of time to prepare since a certain someone spent the entire afternoon with another girl.
Jealous, Roey?
No, of course not.
Are you sure?
Right. Maybe a little.
That's okay. You're pretty, even when you're jealous.
Flattery will get you nowhere, love. What did she want, anyway?
Just some details regarding Fayhorn's will. There was a misunderstanding that took some time to resolve, but in the end, it turned out he bequeathed me something from his personal collection.
Big Sis reached into her clothes and pulled out a small, square thing. It was shiny, bright red, and a bit transparent. It was somewhat similar to Minnick's own shiny gem, but Minnick's precious piece was completely different. It was nice and round and smooth, not blocky and angled like that one.
Oh, wow! What's that? Some magic item or something?
Nope, just a regular ruby. I could probably pawn it off, but I don't have the heart to.
Oh, I would certainly hope not. It's a memento from your role model as an adventurer, right?
Yeah. Besides, even if it's not really practical, it's quite beautiful, isn't it?
It is. I think it fits you perfectly.
Roey, I'm happy to hear that, but your dish is burning.
Oh, beans!
Her softness finally noticed the red thing in the black pan had been giving off weird smoke for a while now. Minnick wasn't sure whether that was good or bad, so it didn't know if it should tell her. Either way, it didn't need to. Her softness resumed tending to the smoky thing with clattering and hissing noises over at the yummy station while Big Sis sat down on one of the chairs. However, she seemed to be feeling rather unfluffy. Her mouth was curved the wrong way, and the sea balls were half hidden by the sea ball curtains in a none too pleased manner. Minnick decided to try and cheer Big Sis up, so Minnick went over to her and started bumping into her legs until Big Sis turned her sea balls towards it. They shone a lot like the warm ceiling bright up on the grand ceiling whenever the mega fluffs weren't in the way. Was Big Sis feeling unfluffy because the big ceiling bright was slacking off again?
What is it, Minnick?
Big Sis spoke to Minnick. Minnick couldn't understand the words, but it didn't need to. Minnick was on a mission of fluffiness and joy, which it intended to fulfill no matter what. To that end, Minnick spat out half of the extra big fur fruit it had caught earlier. The partially eaten fur fruit fell on the ground next to Big Sis's leg with a small splat, sending the red juice everywhere.
Yep, yep, yep.
Here, Big Sis, for you. Big Sis looked down at Minnick's gift, her juice-colored head tilting a bit to the side. The sea ball curtains opened and closed a few times, but she curved her mouth the right way up before long. She briefly turned towards her softness, who faced the other way, and then grabbed Minnick's gift with her bare foot. A small mouth opened up on the underside of it, and it ate Minnick's gift with a few quiet crunches. Afterwards, its tongue rolled out and licked up every last drop of juice before the mouth disappeared. Big Sis then gently patted Minnick on the lid with her foot and stroked its red gem with her foot fingers. That tickled a bit, but Minnick didn't mind. Okay, Minnick minded it a little, but this was how Big Sis showed her appreciation, so it accepted the gesture with no complaints. Several minutes later, her softness and Big Sis started eating the smoky thing from earlier. Big Sis tried to give some to Minnick, but it refused politely with a
bleh
noise. Her softness saw that and said some harsh-sounding words to Big Sis before she placed a bowl on the ground that had several slices of fresh big tree fruit. Each piece had glistening yellow meat, taut red skin, and a few tiny black seeds stuck inside it. Minnick gleefully started eating its favorite treat. It was much tastier than the bits of old tree fruit it was given sometimes, mostly since this one was gushing with juice. Ah, but this was a different kind of juice than the fir fruit. It was more watery and much sweeter. Minnick definitely preferred this one. Not to mention the fir fruit's long, off-white seeds were sometimes too hard for Minnick to chew. The fact that Big Sis could munch on them without even trying was one of many reasons Minnick thought Big Sis was amazing. After the meal ended, her softness and Big Sis climbed onto the big, creaky bed and began rubbing against each other again. There was a lot of moaning and a bit of screaming, but Minnick had already learned that whatever they were doing wasn't as painful as it sounded. It sat quietly on its personal bed that consisted of a single headsoft. It was a bit envious at first since the big bed had several headsofts, but it didn't complain because Minik was a good Minik. Eventually, the screaming died down and only breathing noises were coming from the bed. Minik couldn't see the point of just lying there for hours and hours. Although, her softness seemed to return to full fluffiness when she got back up, so it was probably a good thing. Big Sis, on the other hand, would probably have to leave soon. Indeed, very shortly after rubbing time was over, Big Sis silently got up and started mumbling something.
Transfamiliar.
There was a puff of green smoke and a flash of light as Big Sis disappeared back to her special hidey place, and Mother reappeared in all her softastic glory. As usual, her massive softies bobbed and jiggled with unparalleled fluffiness. Minik really wanted to sit on them, but Mother never let it do that, even back when Father was still around.
Yep! Yep, yep, yep!
Mother, I want to sit on your softies. However, Minik still tried its luck, as per usual.
Shut up, you insufferable little gnat!
It would seem Minik was denied once again. Minik didn't need to know her words to understand what that unfluffy tone meant.
Hmm? Huh? Kira, is that...
Sleep!
Thud. Her softness let out a few noises and stood up a little before she went back to what she was doing when Mother scolded her. Mother had a gift for scolding and often scolded Minik. However, that was just how Mother always was, so Minik didn't mind. Okay, Minik minded it a little, but complaining would only result in more scolding. Still, Minik believed it would one day sit on Mother's softies and attain true fluffiness, so it would definitely ask again the next chance it got. Mother glared at Minik in a rather unfluffy way and silently pointed at one of the lids of the big box. Minik never understood why these big boxes had such relatively small lids or why there were so many of them, but it just accepted it as fact. There were many types of boxes, after all. Minik was one, and Big Bro was sometimes a box, too. That's why Minik recognized Big Bro as a Big Bro in the first place, though it didn't understand why Big Bro was sometimes a Big Sis instead.
Get out, or I'll throw you out.
Oh, right. How thoughtless of Minik. Mother probably wanted some alone time again, but Minik failed to notice, so it got yelled at again. Not wishing to upset Mother's fluffiness any longer, Minik walked up to the big wooden lid and exited through the tinier lid on it. The fact that Big Sis had put a lid within a lid nearly blew Minik's mind, so Minik was always a bit awestruck whenever it passed through. Those wriggly strangers that dropped by a while ago used it too, which was why Minik complained about them to her softness. It wasn't sure why, but soon after it was sent to another box for a while. The whole affair was just another thing Minik would probably never understand, so it didn't worry about it too much. Besides, everything went back to the usual fluffiness when Big Sis returned. Regardless, Minik was given leave to play around, so it decided to do just that. At least until the ceiling bright came back, which was usually when Big Sis returned. So, Minik decided to keep exploring that one place it found recently, even though it was a bit far. It ran up to the edge of the floor and jumped off without any hesitation. Minik reveled in the sensation of free-falling as it plummeted uncontrollably towards the ground. Minik felt a strong gust of wind push it from the side. Minik then crashed through a particularly leafy branch, bounced off a flying feather fruit, got caught up in some dangling long leaves, rolled across one of the slanted top bits of a brick box, and landed safely in a bin filled with somewhat soft but nasty-looking stuff. Minik climbed out of the bin and skittered quickly yet casually across the dirt-covered floor, wondering for the umpteenth time when someone would actually clean it up. Minik wanted to do it itself, but it lacked the means to do so. After all, Minik didn't have Sweepy's outstanding cleaning skills. That slim, tall, and bristly fellow would sort this mess out in no time flat if it was there. Minik was sure of it. Minik continued running across the familiar, dirty floor until it came to a small hole in a stone wall and crawled inside it. It climbed down into a dark, dank tunnel that had some extremely filthy water running through the middle of it. That stream was bad news. Not only did Minik not care for the taste, but her softness would somehow know if Minik splashed in the stuff. She would then scold it while scrubbing it clean with some warm, slightly bubbly water. That was why Minik walked along the stone path next to the icky stream, making doubly sure not to slip or otherwise fall into it again. Because Minik was a good Minik that did not want to upset her softness, even if getting scrubbed felt nice. After aimlessly walking the series of tunnels for a long while, Minik somehow made it to the place where Minik wanted to visit. Minik didn't know how these mysterious and confusing tunnels worked and got lost with frightening frequency, yet somehow always ended up at the right place. The spot in question was shaped like the inside of a supersized stone box. There were several tunnels that carried the filthy water into it, while a slightly bigger one drained it away somewhere. There were a lot of these stone boxes around, but Minik knew this was the right one because it saw that one tunnel in the corner had nothing coming out of it. Minik walked along the edge of the giant box and hopped into the curiously dry tunnel. It was much darker than the other ones, but Minik didn't need sea balls to look around. It could see all of its surroundings at once thanks to its shiny red gem, so while it often got lost, it almost never tripped over stuff. Except when it did. However, all that walking around was making Minik feel a bit hungry, so Minik kept its gem open for a snack. It soon found some fir fruits lying about the dry tunnel, though these were much too big to eat. They didn't have any juice in them either, as most of it seemed to have leaked out and dried up. On the other hand, there were quite a few buzz fruits floating around them. Those ones weren't as filling as fir fruits, but were much easier to eat and catch due to Minik's flexible tongue. Unfortunately, these tunnel buzz fruits were much nastier than the ones above, so in the end, Minik decided to give up on them, too. Minik was sure her softness would prepare another bowl of big tree fruit when it returned, so it had no qualms passing up on these inferior snacks. Minik kept resolutely skittering across the tunnel. Minik didn't see anything interesting for a while, other than a number of dried-up fir fruits. Some of them had been here for so long that only their seeds were left behind. Eventually, Minik found itself inside another stone box, almost the same as the one on the other end of the dry tunnel. Well, other than the fact that this one was completely dry, had a bunch of fires lighting it up, and was really, really loud. The noise was coming from a large number of things milling about. They looked a bit like fir fruits, but with many key differences. For one thing, they were even bigger than those fir fruits of unusual size that Minik came across on the way here, though not quite as tall as Big Sis. They did, however, have perky triangular listen holes that looked a lot like hers. Their fur looked to be much fluffier than regular fir fruits, too. It was mostly gray in color, although the area around their sea holes was black, while the bits directly above that and running along their long, protruding mouths were white. They also had fluffy-looking striped tails alternating between gray and black, and their sniffers were small, black, and round, almost like a woofer's. Some of them stood on their hind legs, and most wore at least one article of clothing, such as old aprons, beat-up hats, or rag-like shirts. They moved with purpose, going in and out of appropriately sized boxes apparently made out of mud and wood. A number of them had a bunch of random objects lined up on small wooden planks and exchanged them for shiny stones with the ones passing by. It was almost like that busy place that her softness went to get fresh big tree fruits every now and then. She had brought Minik with her several times, so it was quite sure it had the same atmosphere. Minik curiously approached the bustling space filled with chattering noises of various kinds. Minik had never seen creatures such as these and was very eager to sit on one of them to test out their softness. As luck had it, one of them was near the edge of all that hustle and bustle. It was splayed out on its back behind a particularly large box that sounded like there were a bunch more of them inside. A rather foul-looking liquid was dribbling from the corner of its mouth, but Minik wasn't going to be deterred so easily. Minik approached the creature from the side and called out to it.
Yep, yep.
Excuse me, but may I sit on you? Cold floor. Minik had no way of knowing what that quiet growling noise meant, but it didn't sound like a no. Therefore, it confidently climbed up its furry arm and sat somewhere on its belly. As expected, the fur was quite soft. Though it fell short of her softness's softies, it was enough to rival Minik's personal bed. Therefore, Minik decided to refer to these unfamiliar creatures as fluff furs. It was a very luxurious name, but one that fit the adequately fluffy thing Minik was sitting on. Not only that, but Minik found the gentle up-and-down motion caused by the fluff fur's breathing to be quite relaxing.
Kirata!
There he is! A high-pitched chitter interrupted Minik's fluffy time. A trio of fluff furs approached the one on the ground. However, they clearly weren't peaceful since all of them bared their pointed teeth. The one in the middle was also holding a knife, and not in the munchies-will-be-ready-soon way that her softness practiced. The three newcomers surrounded the fluff fur on the ground. They clearly had some business with him, but their eyesight was inevitably drawn to Minik's fancy frame and shining red jewel. It was nearly the same look that Big Sis had when she and Minik first met. Look at that shiny thing. Wow, did this deadbeat always have such a thing? So shiny. No way, he can barely afford mushroom wine. So, should we take it instead? Pause off, it's mine. No, the shiny is mine. Quiet, you idiots. I'm the boss here, so it's mine. Minik had no idea what was going on, but judging from how their chittering and soft purring grew into dangerous-sounding growls, this clearly wasn't going to end in a fluffy situation. Therefore, Minik decided now was a good time to leave. So while the three fluff furs were busy hissing and snarling at one another, Minik carefully climbed off its seat and tried to skitter away. Huh? The shiny is trying to run away! However, it appeared they saw through Minik's escape attempt almost immediately. One of the fluff furs jumped at Minik and tried to snatch it up, but Minik managed to leap out of the way of its grabby claws. Minik wanted to run away and tried its best to do so, but another fluff fur managed to grab Minik before it gained any speed. He lifted Minik above his head and let out a triumphant cry. Shiny! I said mine! The one with the knife moved forward and cut him on the back. He howled in pain and stumbled forward, dropping Minik in the process. He retaliated by turning around and clawing his attacker across the face, causing some juice to gush out from the knife holder's seahole. The third one took advantage of the confusion and chased after Minik, but Minik had already bounced away at top speed in a random direction. That much taller fluff fur would have easily caught up to Minik, but for better or for worse, Minik ended up running into the crowd of fluff furs. Howls, roars, chitters, and other sounds intensified around it as the big stone box's interior was thrown into chaos. Two of the fluff furs grabbed Minik on either side with one paw each and started punching and clawing each other while pulling on Minik from both directions. A pointy-tipped wooden stick suddenly appeared and slid into one's shoulder, causing him to fall to one side and let go of Minik. The other fluff fur held on to Minik firmly and made a run for it, only to be hit by a thick piece of metal from the side. Possession of Minik was then forcibly relinquished to the really big and tough-looking fluff fur that was holding that metal. This one kept moving around while swatting other fluff furs with one hand as if they were nothing, all while holding on to the struggling Minik. Pretty soon, the other fluff furs gave up on coming near the big and tough one and merely hissed and growled from a distance. Just when it appeared that things had more or less calmed down, a streak of fire flew in out of nowhere. It struck the big fluff fur, making him stumble while also singeing much of his softness. Iron Club, drop the shiny if you know what's good for you. The one yelling was a fluff fur missing a sea ball and wearing an old filthy rag as a pointy hat. He was waving a weirdly shaped stick in the tough one's general direction. Stupid flame eye, If you want it, then come at me.
Halt!
Firebolt! The tough fluffer's protests were cut short by another plume of flame that just barely grazed his listen holes. That was a warning shot. Give up. You can't beat me. Bring it, fool. You asked for it. Firebolt! Another lump of heat came flying at the fluff fur still clinging onto Minnick, but this time he dodged it entirely. However, he moved a bit too far to the left, prompting one of the surrounding fluff furs to leap out of the sidelines and bite into his exposed arm. The two of them struggled for a few moments while the hat wearer prepared to do his thing again. Just as he was about to unleash his fire, yet another random fluff fur from the crowd leaped at the tough one. Their heads collided, forcing the big one to fall over with a yelp while finally letting go of his captive. The sudden motion flung Minnick into the air with the worst possible angle and timing.
Firebolt!
Firebolt! The surrounding fluffers watched with mouths and sea balls wide open as the hat wearer's magic flew straight at Minnick. The projectile would undoubtedly burn Minnick to a crisp, possibly breaking its shiny gem. Thankfully, that did not happen. Instead, the plume of flame curved unnaturally to the right just as it was about to hit Minnick and struck one of the bystander fluffers instead. A special action has been performed. Luck plus one. Oh, hey! Minnick's old friend, Mr. Thinkbox, was back. Unfortunately, Minnick didn't have time to chat right now and had to send it away. Minnick knew it was rude, but it had a duty as Big Bro's sibling to return home at all costs. This was a good chance for it, too, since all the fluff fur's attention was focused on the one that was just hit. Minnick took the opportunity and skittered across the dirty floor with all its might. A few of the surrounding fluff furs stepped away when they saw it approach, but one of them pounced on it and held it down with both claws.
Firebolt!
Firebolt! However, that hat wearer refused to quit and threw yet more fire. The fluff fur holding on to Minnick held Minnick up so that it was once more in the path of the incoming lump of heat. Like before, the projectile's flight path swerved illogically around Minnick in a perfect half circle before striking the fluff fur right in the sniffer. He fell over without uttering a yell, while a very confused and startled Minnick fell out of his suddenly limp paws. A special action has been performed. Luck plus one. Minnick was a bit happy to see Mr. Thinkbox was back so soon, but had to dismiss it once again with a silent apology. Minnick had landed upside down on its lid, but it managed to flip itself over by opening its mouth really wide. Just as Minnick was about to break out into another run, it realized that the fluff furs had drawn back even farther away from Minnick. Even that persistent hat wearer was looking at it funny, seemingly wondering something.
Out.
Firebolt? Yet another fiery projectile flew towards Minnick. This one, like the others, swung bizarrely around Minnick and flew right back at its owner, burning the hat wearer's hat clean off of his fluffy head. The fluffer ran away screaming so quickly that he forgot his weird stick. Minnick felt bad about this turn of events. The formerly hatted one had put on such a fun light show, yet Minnick hadn't thanked it. Minnick was a good Minnick, so it wanted to make amends. It trotted over to the dropped weird stick, carefully picked it up with its mouth, and turned towards the crowd of fluffers. Excuse me, I'd like to return this. For some reason, every last fluffer started running away while yelling. Even the big, tough one limped off with great speed, even though his leg had a weird bend in it. This puzzled and troubled Minnick greatly. Did Minnick somehow ruin the fluffer's collective fluffiness? That couldn't be the case. Minnick was a good Minnick and would never do that. Perhaps this was some fun game? That one called Hide and Seek came to mind. Yes, that was surely it. What other reason could there possibly be for so many things to run from Minnick? Having internally resolved that misunderstanding, Minnick decided to play along and had lots of fun chasing the fluffers around. They seemed to enjoy it as well, since they threw lots of gifts at the Minik. None of those presents touched Minik, since they kept changing course at the last second, but that was fine. Minik would have liked to accept those rocks and pointy metal things, but it had to politely decline since it couldn't carry them all. A special action has been performed. Luck plus one. Mr. Thinkbox came back a few more times, but Minik wasn't surprised. Mr. Thinkbox only dropped by when pretty lights and tiny gifts were being exchanged. Minik couldn't chat with Mr. Thinkbox like this, but Minik didn't mind. Okay, Minik minded it a little, but only because Minik wanted to catch up with its old friend. In any event, Minik was getting pretty hungry, so it spat out the weird stick, yipped a quick goodbye, and then ran off. Minik was eager to return to her softness and munch on more big tree fruit, so it moved as fast as its stubby legs could carry it. Minik made its way through the completely unfamiliar maze of underground tunnels until it somehow reached the surface. Looking up, Minik saw that the big ceiling bright was just about to get back to its post atop the grand ceiling. People were already out and about, so Minik had to be extra careful not to get stepped on by a stranger on its way back home. Despite its best efforts, however, Minik ended up accidentally bumping into someone's leg.
Oi! Watch it!
The limb's owner jumped lightly.
Wait. Minik? Is Rowana here with you?
The pointy listen-holed man looked around for a bit, then knelt down and held out his hand towards Minik. Minik recognized him as the same person that Minik stayed with a while back, though Minik still wasn't sure why Minik was sent there in the first place. Still, he wasn't a stranger, so Minik decided to be on its best behavior. It walked up to and lightly bumped against the man's outstretched hand before offering a cordial greeting.
Yep.
Why, hello there, good sir. A pleasure to see you are still of sound mind and body. Forgive the sudden disturbance, but would you be willing to assist me?
Lively as ever, huh? Still, you're a long way from home. Even if you like exploring, this is a bit much, mate.
Yep.
Marvelous. Then I would be deeply grateful if Sir would be kind enough to escort me to Her Royal Softness and Honorable Elder Sister's box of residence.
This busy street is no place for you. Come here, you little bugger. Let's get you back to where you belong.
Minik was gently picked up and carried off in the direction Minik was trying to go. It would seem Minik managed to relay its intent despite the language barrier. Minik was quite proud of itself for accomplishing such a feat. And indeed, just as promised, the nice man brought Minik right to Her Softness's box and knocked on its lid. Her Softness noticed the signal and opened the lid within a few moments.
Morning, Miss Slythe.
Good morning, Mr. Cunningham. Oh, Minik, there you are.
Minik was passed from one set of hands to the other, feeling the distinct sensation of Her Softness's softies pressing against its frame.
Thanks so much for bringing him over. I hope it wasn't a bother.
Ha ha! No worries, Miss Slythe. I know full well he's quite the slippery bugger. Has way too much energy for such a tiny pipsqueak.
I'll say. I still have no idea how he manages to move around so much, even though he never sleeps. We take him for walks and everything, but he never seems to tire out.
Well, what can you do? That's part of the little guy's charm.
I suppose you're right. Would you like to come in for a cup of tea while you're here?
No, that's quite all right. I actually have to get ready for work. Good thing for our little friend here that I decided to leave early, eh? That reminds me. You might want to stay home for the next few hours.
What? Why?
Whole lot of raccoonians spewed out of the sewers just before dawn. Been causing quite the commotion since. I hear the guards are trying to get them under control, but the fuzzy bastards are too slippery for them.
My word. It's only at times like these I'm glad I live this high up. That's weird, though. Aren't raccoonians just a bunch of cowardly vermin that live off garbage?
That may be so, but they're still monsters. They're violent buggers when provoked.
So something spooked them? In the sewers?
Her Softness's grip on Minik tightened a bit, pressing it against her softies even more.
Seems so. They're still running around down there in a mad panic, attacking anyone and anything in their way.
No fatalities, I hope.
Not that I'm aware, but plenty of scratches and bites.
Oh no, the clinic's gonna be flooded with smellitis and pusculosis cases.
Minnick saw that her softness was making a face of do not want and tried to cheer her up, but Minnick was held too tightly to offer words of wisdom.
Indeed, that's why I wanted to get to work early, actually. I imagine the morning shift would appreciate having an extra pair of hands to handle the influx of cases.
Want me to come too?
No, no, it's quite all right.
You're sure?
Absolutely. It's not as if confused noses and oozing pustules are life-threatening. Besides, I wouldn't dare intrude upon you and your girlfriend's time together.
Thanks.
No worries. Anyway, I really need to get going. Enjoy your time off, and I'll see you at work in a few days. Ta-ta, Miss Slice.
The man departed with a smile and a wave as her softness brought Minnick inside the comfortable old box. She seemed displeased with Minnick's griminess from the adventure, so it would probably be bubble water time soon. Minnick looked around for Big Sis and saw her sitting in the corner, fiddling with those springy, clicky, and poppy things she liked to play with. Oh, wait, no. That was actually Mother. She and Big Sis sometimes traded places, probably as part of some fun game. Minnick could immediately tell them apart, even though others mixed them up quite often. Minnick understood their confusion, though. Those two really looked quite alike when they wanted to, probably because they were so close. Minnick could tell there was an oddly nostalgic bond between Big Sis and Mother. It felt almost the same as the one that existed between Mother and Father. Thinking about such things reminded Minnick of a better, fluffier time when Father and all of Minnick's siblings were still around in that noisy, constantly rowdy place. Sweepy, Cookers, Sir Seatmeister III, Wardrobezilla, Tablesworth, the Bowl Triplets, and all the rest. Minnick missed every last one of them. Minnick went through some rather unfluffy experiences since their separation. But things were better now. Minnick had people that it could share many fluffy times with. For the first time since that fateful day when Father disappeared, Minnick finally had a home again. Granted, this one was smaller, a bit dirtier, and didn't have any of its siblings. But Minnick didn't mind. Minnick didn't mind a single bit. Chapter 3. Positive Reinforcement. Part 1.
Power shot!
The ranger pulled a trigger as he spoke those words. That simple action initiated a basic mechanism resulting in the near instantaneous release of a latch, which freed a taut string from its grip. The string was attached to horizontal wooden limbs that sprang forward as they recovered from their malformed shape. The thread causing the deformity was pulled forward as well, pressing into the bottom of a narrow wooden shaft. This precise application of force propelled the steel-tipped object along a groove which sent it flying through the air. The crossbow launched its bolt without a hitch. The perfectly executed martial art empowered the projectile, allowing it to fly impossibly straight while carrying significantly more force than physics allowed. The steel-tipped shaft's magic left a bright red trail of light as it soared through the battlefield. One of the first things it passed over was the corpse of a male elf. His once shining silver armor was split asunder and covered with blood, both his own and that of his enemies. The long-handled axe that caused his mortal wound was still lodged in his chest, although its owner was nowhere to be seen. However, the traces of blood and torn skin on the weapon's handle suggested that the elf's killer hadn't met a pleasant fate. The crossbow bolt continued on its way, completely unhindered by the grisly scene beneath it. Not that it had a choice in the matter, being an inanimate object and all, nor could it do anything to avoid the shard of jagged ice ahead. The spell flew in a direction that intersected with the bolt's path, albeit much slower. Their relative speeds were so different that they could be compared to an athlete in a dead sprint and a drunkard stumbling down an alley. Thus, the wooden projectile pulled ahead before its magical counterpart got in its way, allowing both to continue towards their intended targets. However, the crossbow bolt's intended victim was currently locked in close quarters combat. He had been kicked brutally in the abdomen just as the bolt was launched, and his head swayed just enough to barely avoid a remote stabbing. The power shot imbued bolt passed behind his ears without inflicting so much as a scratch and continued flying unhindered for a dozen more meters before it finally struck something. Something white, round, and metal. Your body has been pierced. HP minus 107. Or rather, someone.
Oi! Watch the pants!
Fizzy couldn't help but voice her displeasure through gritted teeth. An arrow impact to the rear was not something she needed while struggling with some monster tamer's pet janther. The massive six-legged feline predator clenched its powerful jaws around the golem's signature wrench, locking the two in a contest of strength. The smaller, relatively lighter paladin was pinned in place as the janther's titanic weight pressed down on her from above. If her body had been made of flesh and blood rather than mithril, then she'd most likely be a bloody smear on the ground right now.
Come on, you know we gotta do this.
A voice echoed in Fizzy's head. It sounded exactly like she used to, back when she was still a pathetic sack of meat known as a gnome. She hated that.
I've got this,
she answered, struggling with the massive cat-like monster. Despite her words, the janther spotted an opening. It momentarily shifted its weight and swiped at the mithril golem with its two left forelegs. Sparks flew as specially made metal claws covering the beast's paws clashed against Fizzy's right shoulder and thigh, digging deep into her battered and dented frame. The monster's custom-made weapons were enchanted with tremendous strength, allowing them to pierce the golem's outermost plating and dig into the mechanical muscle underneath. You have suffered a shallow cut. HP minus 51. You have suffered a moderate cut. HP minus 264. If they could do that to Fizzy's living mithril hide, then it was safe to assume they'd rip up mundane steel armor like paper.
Yeah, you clearly have this under control.
The voice rolled its non-existent eyes.
I could do with less sarcasm!
Then why don't you let me help? Do you want Boxy to see us in this pathetic state?
Fizzy's straining, furious expression was momentarily overcome by pure, unadulterated terror. Somewhere deep down, she still feared that creature. However, unlike 2 months ago, she wasn't afraid of being eaten or abused. These were the concerns of a pathetic meatbag who was, present Headspace Company excluded, dead and forgotten. The golem was troubled by something else entirely. She didn't want to disappoint Boxy and make it think less of her. Fizzy's narcissistic nature demanded attention and worship, and nobody had given her as much of either as that monster. If there was even a non-zero chance that appearing in less than pristine condition would lessen the creature's interest in her, then Fizzy would do anything to avoid it.
Parallel one!
She growled. Her left eye shone with a bright, yellow-green light in response to those words. All of her paladin spells and skills displayed the same hue when invoked. This coloration was a slight deviation from Holy Magic's usual golden radiance, which served as a subtle hint that she served the god of gambling. After all, green was Danny's favorite color. Not that the beast assaulting her would recognize the significance involved, and that assumed it even noticed the change in the golem's appearance.
Judgment!
Fizzy's mouth invoked a spell without its owner's involvement. A large, semi-transparent club of pure light materialized out of thin air, smashing into the janther's head with an upward swing. The sudden impact knocked the beast off the shiny paladin and gave her some metaphorical breathing room. She held up the shield permanently attached to her left arm while her right hand tightened its grip on her oversized wrench. The janther, draped in blue cloth, a sign of its allegiance to the Empire, shook off the sudden impact and lurched forward in an attempt to bite her in half. This time, however, the paladin was ready for it. Her Champion of Chaos skill successfully predicted the beast's movements moments prior, allowing Fizzy to gracefully sidestep its jaws while twisting her body around. She used the motion's momentum to take a full two-handed swing with her wrench. The nimble predator tried putting up both of its armored forelegs to block, but an unseen force made its special armaments suddenly feel a lot heavier. Thus, it was too slow to defend against the huge blow. The wrench-shaped hunk of steel then made contact with the right side of the beast's skull. The creature half roared, half yelled as it reeled from the blow. While it did reflexively throw its head back to avoid some of the impact, it was still left momentarily stunned. Not one to let a chance slip by her, Fizzy chased after its head with a rapid step. She tightened her two-handed grip on the improvised mace and activated one of her newly acquired martial arts while simultaneously invoking a spell.
Grand Slam! Holy Light!
The weapon glowed red and swung towards the Janther once again in a wide, horizontal arc as a bright flash of divine magic enveloped the golem's battered frame. The powerful attack landed cleanly, striking the beast's fuzzy head with enough force to crack its thick skull. It might have even taken its head clean off if not for the monster's powerful neck muscles. At the same time, her dents and scratches immediately buffed themselves out in a series of barely audible dings. The healing spell's influence even popped out the crossbow bolt stuck in her backside.
Grand Slam!
Without breaking her stride in the slightest, Fizzy spun around
Grand
on her
slam!
Heel like a top and attacked the Janther once again.
Grand Slam! Judgment!
A spell invocation immediately followed the next martial arts activation. Both closed in on the beast's heavily tenderized head like an overly enthusiastic vice. The judgment spell, which was a physical manifestation of a paladin's faith and holy power, had taken the form of a plucked chicken, which thankfully was not detrimental to its effectiveness. Together with the empowered wrench swing, it crushed the overgrown meatbag's battered cranium into something resembling a bag of chunky soup, instantly ending its life.
See? Was that so hard?
Fizzy asked smugly.
Don't be so proud of yourself for chanting a spell or two.
Her face turned sour.
I did all the work.
Don't be like that,
she replied to herself.
We all need a bit of incoming!
Heeding her own warning, Fizzy turned around and covered herself with her shield as much as possible. A pure white mass of cold struck the ground directly next to her, exploding in a wave of freezing air and shards of ice which threw her several meters to the side. She landed on her back and tried to scramble to her feet, but her left arm and leg no longer responded to her commands as they were encased in ice.
Fuck!
She cursed before she began chanting.
Cleanse!
A wave of divine energy washed over her and attempted to purge all the hostile magic afflicting her. The ice crystals around her limbs shattered, but she still couldn't move them. She used her still-functioning right arm to toss the wrench into the path of an incoming frostbolt. The magical projectile instantly encased her weapon in yet more ice. This rendered it largely unwieldable, but it was a better alternative than taking that spell directly.
Cleanse!
Another attempt at dispelling the hostile magic saw Fizzy regain the use of her left arm, although her leg was still immobilized. She used what freedom she regained to put up her shield, trying to cover her head as much as possible.
Ice spear!
Two voices rang out as one. The Imperial Cryomancer shot a bright blue beam that hit her cursed and strangely sparkling shield. The defensive martial art deflected the spell, and it flew off harmlessly into the sky above her.
Shit!
She cursed under her breath.
Of course it's cleanse! A blasted Cryomancer!
The third attempt finished purifying the lingering effects of that freezing explosion, allowing Fizzy full use of all her limbs. Which was good, because she would need them. Cryomancers were a pain in the ass for the paladin to deal with. Cold and ice-based magic was the bane of all metal golems, their elemental weakness. Not only did Fizzy take nearly twice as much damage from such sources, but they also caused her mechanical joints to seize up. Granted, ice magic's most pronounced strong point was its ability to restrict movement, but it had a much more profound effect on Fizzy's species. A metal golem's pseudo-mechanical body required constant circulation of magical energy to function, not unlike how meatbags needed blood. However, extreme cold could disrupt or entirely halt this flow, effectively paralyzing a golem's limbs. In short, Fizzy was at a huge disadvantage against a cryomancer, especially if he was powerful enough to casually drop a freezing comet on her. Not to mention that her tussle with that Janther and the general skull-smashing and spine-snap